As we watch thousands of people around the world protest against police brutality and racism, how do we begin to understand the ways systems of oppression are created? One scholar says one important step is to interrogate what it means in this country to be white. Claudia Rankin is an award-winning author and professor of poetry at Yale University, and she joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you, Tanya, for having me.
Yes, so interrogating whiteness, it's such a simple but profound idea, especially in light of the fact that anytime we talk about racism, we're kind of interrogating the oppressed. For instance, in this moment, what it means to be black in this country. Your reframing feels foreign. And you even felt at the start of putting together your class, Constructions of Whiteness at Yale University, that you'd receive backlash from it. Say more.
So to switch the lens would be to have everybody in the room. It was like we were having a conversation, but only half of the people involved were in the room. So you had, white people saying they wanted to talk about race, but they only talked about people of color or blackness. They didn't understand whiteness as its own construction leading to the treatment of black people or people of color. So it was sort of a kind of switch. And obviously I wasn't the first one to do it. There was a movement in the 80s, Toni Morrison wrote Playing in the Dark. But you just have to keep at these things until finally it sort of clicks in the culture.
Your work is also bringing to mind for me something that scholar Eddie Glaude said about systemic racism, that yes, black people at this moment are crying out for justice, but that racism is a white people's problem. And I'm paraphrasing here because there is actually nuance to this, as you know, but he's saying that it's up to them to fix it. What are your thoughts on this?
I hear where he's coming from, but I think it's all our problems at this point. I ask myself, what ways am I complicit? When am I not speaking up when I should be speaking up? Because as we're in this culture, somehow we must have allowed things to happen to get to this moment. It's fantastic what's happening with the protests. So it's a democracy. And if what we want is a democracy, then it's all our problem.
Right now, a lot of white people are making efforts to be sympathetic and empathetic. And you've said that there is no mode of empathy that can understand you can die for simply being black. Can you explain the limits of empathy and what role it plays in these conversations?
I admire the desire to wish to understand. But I think one could also understand that there is no understanding what it means to have generations of trauma and to have to sustain that and to know that at any moment you could be killed in the way that George Floyd was killed. But white people can understand that they cannot be me and still understand that there is a problem.
So I want to go back to something you were saying about this being an everybody problem that we all need to take on. You and I, however, are two black women who are having this discussion about cross-racial conversations, about racism. And historically, this kind of work, though, falls heavily on educating white people about being black. You're making the case for something different.
Well, I think we all need to be educated. I really believe that unless we start talking to each other and staying in the room and sustaining the conversation, we'll never get beyond it. And that kind of work has begun. I think what we saw and are seeing in protest are not just random people going out into the street. Black Lives Matter formed Say Her Name, Kimberly Crenshaw, and Surge showing up for racial justice. They have been working with other grassroots organizations to educate people, to begin conversations, to begin cross-race conversations. And now we see people able to mobilize and come out and have those conversations. So I think this is a collaborative discussion over years that has been going on. And it has to be, because if it's not, we will just have the continuation of a white supremacist orientation that is unfortunately right now the governing power base in this country.
In Interrogating Whiteness, and you teaching the interrogation of whiteness, it's not easy work. It's messy. It's painful. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, teaching it or even just having conversations with your neighbor, your friends, it's difficult. We all are projecting onto things in terms of what we want as our expected outcomes. All of that is happening all the time. And yet we can't not have the conversation. I think Robin DiAngelo has talked a lot about the fragility of white people in these conversations, how they feel victimized. They see any critique of the system, any reminder of the injustice as a personal affront, rather than understanding themselves as part of a system and investing in that change. And part of the change is looking at the truth. And so I think, you know, a lot has to happen. You have to navigate people's feelings. You have to navigate truth-telling. You have to figure out where the facts that are reliable are coming from, all of that.
I want to also ask you about mourning. So in 2015, you wrote in the New York Times about a friend telling you that the condition of Black life is mourning. And of course, the other side of this is also joy and resilience. But you make the case for sustained national mourning. Can you say more about what you mean and really how this might help shift how we understand death and race in this country?
Well, I think, oddly, I think this is what we're seeing.
Yes.
A national, international response to an event that was horrific. What I was asking for is that, can we see Black people as people and have the same human response we would have for the death of anyone, and understand that these kinds of deaths, it's really a death inside America. It's a death of America. It's a death of democracy. I actually feel both sad and hopeful by what I'm seeing now.
One thing I'm also hearing from you, though, Claudia, is also a reframing of this problem, not a Black community problem, but an American problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
yes.
A distinction that I think is important in your work, because so much of what we're hearing is that this is happening to Black communities versus this is happening to America.
Exactly. Another way to look at it is to, you know, COVID. The minute we learned that people with underlying conditions were more subject to the virus and that white people were not as vulnerable as Black African Americans, people wanted to throw out their masks, because what happens to African Americans doesn't matter in their worldview of what it means to live relationally as an American citizen. And so, you know, the same thing was happening in terms of racism. They didn't really feel like it had to do with them, which was, of course, ridiculous, because racism doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's about how this country exists and who we vote in and who controls how our government works, which is why, you know, this is probably one of the most important elections we will have ever.
That's poet and writer Claudia Rankin. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.